Coming up this week, we begin a new book review. Those of you who use PowerPoint or Keynote will not want to miss this one. Also, a gold mine of images and illustrations for those of you doing Bible class, all free. Lots of listener feedback, yes, even on Pinterest. All that and more on episode 253 of Wells Tech Presentation Zen. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs on the Wells Tech Podcast. This is episode 253 for September 11th, 2012. And good morning, Sally. September 11th. Do you remember where you were 11 years ago?
I do remember September 11th very well. My husband was a student at MLC, and I was staying home with my kids, and a friend called, and I turned on the TV and sat in front of it the rest of the day, unfortunately. Yeah. A day we remember.
I don't think there are too many people who will forget where they were that day. It's kind of like the day we landed on the moon, or Kennedy was shot, or whatever. Just one of those days. I was actually working in Chicago at the time, probably three blocks from the Sears Tower, it was called at that point. Mm. And just everybody there was wondering whether that was also a target. So we closed down the office and went home, and like everybody else, watched the events. So.
Well, still gives me chills today. Yeah, it's really something.
Our prayers go out to all those families that one day had a father or mother, and the next day didn't. That's a sad thing. But God is still good and works through that. And 11 years later, we remember it.
Yeah. Kicking off a new book today?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
On a totally separate topic.
My copy.
This is something that I don't even have my copy here. I've got it all. I've got it all in here.
Oh, excellent.
We are. Those of you that are longtime listeners will know that I don't know if we do it every year, but we go through a book from essentially cover to cover. You and I read it, and we encourage or invite our listeners to read it as well. We try and pick a book that has some application, whether it be to technology or ministry or both. The book that we're going through today, called Presentation Zen, is a book that I use in a class that I teach for MLC called Dynamic Classroom Presentations. The book, which I've just started requiring for the course, is one that probably provides an excellent foundation for design principles. It's not a designer's book, and it's not a presenter's book, but it's kind of a mix. Anybody interested in creating presentations that really engage maybe the learner, probably more than anything else, that's probably the best word. This would be a book that I would recommend. And it comes in all kinds of different versions. There's a second edition out now, which you have, Sally, but there's also an ebook, which is a little bit cheaper. It's not a long read, but I think when it's one of those reference books that you're not always going to read cover to cover, but you're going to consistently refer back to, and it's got pictures. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I think that would go well with what they're trying to explain there, and that presentations are not a million bullet points on a screen. Instead, they're imagery to support whatever you're discussing in your meeting or whatever. And so, yeah, I think ministry uses for sure. We have teachers and pastors in our listening audience. We also have a lot of lay leaders who obviously in their day-to-day dealings probably are witness to many presentations and give them themselves. And yep. So it's kind of a fact of life. My kids at high school level are required to learn PowerPoint. It's a ninth grade computer apps class requirement. And so everybody's got that basic knowledge of how to throw information up on a screen. But how to do it well is kind of a different story.
Yeah, and that's the point of the book. There are lots of different, as you mentioned, there are lots of different ministry applications. So maybe we should define what we're talking about when we say a presentation. It really is ancillary to a talk or a lesson or something that you are presenting. It's backup material. It's something that the presenter uses to reinforce or enhance the message. So that could happen within a sermon, a Bible class, a classroom setting where you're teaching a lesson on a particular topic. So all of those apply, and I think the book itself takes a pretty generic approach. What I did kind of figure out as I was teaching this class for the first time and using this text is that it's not specific to classrooms or sermons or whatever. It's kind of a generic business book, but the principles that are in here really apply across the board. So I think it's going to be a good read, and we're going to start off today talking about chapter one, which is just mostly introductory information, but really foundational. And if you can't buy into the concepts here in chapter one, the rest of the book is going to be a little bit meaningless for you. So you may want to listen today and then determine whether this is a book that you want on your shelf or not.
Yeah. Just a little bit of background about the author. The guy's name is Gar Reynolds. He's a former Apple employee. I think he was kind of one of their evangelists that traveled around and promoted the products that Apple has. And now he's actually living in Japan and teaching in a university setting there. And so he has a whole website, Presentation Zen. He has a website, garreynolds.com. So you could read more about him and find out more about him. One of the things I found interesting was a TEDx talk that he had done in Tokyo. And if you're interested, we can put a link to that in the show notes as well, just to kind of give you a little bit of background of where he's coming from.
Yeah, he absolutely practiced what he preaches, and it's always good to learn by example, and he does a nice job of that. And there's all kinds of interviews of him on the internet. If you just search Gar Reynolds on YouTube, you'll see him interviewed by a number of different people, and he talks about a number of different things. The website is great. The fact that he is in Japan is no coincidence. He really likes the culture, and he really applies it through the book. That's the title, Presentation Zen. And you'll see that as you read through the book, that he applies a lot of the principles that are kind of unique to Japan to the concept of presentation and presentation technology.
Yeah, I had to look up Zen. I'm not real worldly in that regard, I guess. But, you know, I guess it kind of comes from a Buddhist enlightenment kind of thing through right. meditation and self-actualization or whatever. And he makes it clear in the beginning that that's not really what he's talking about, right. but more of being enlightened about how to do presentations well, being kind of crossing a threshold and doing a better job of doing your presentations is more what he's getting at with the title.
And it really comes in, especially in this introductory chapter, the concept of Zen, one of the main tenets of it is simplicity, clearing the mind, keeping things as simple as possible. And, you know, over and over and over again in this introductory chapter one, it talks about rethinking how you do presentations. And, you know, right away in the first couple pages, he talks about an experience of him sitting on a train, sipping coffee or tea or something, and looking across the way at a businessman preparing for a presentation. And he kind of looked over his shoulder a little bit and saw a bunch of slide printouts, of 100 or 200 words of text per slide. And he thought, well, I hope he's just prepping that this is not going to be something that he's going to show, you know, the people that he's presenting to, because, boy, wouldn't that be a disaster? And he makes a point that it's a good point, that it's very difficult for somebody to read and listen at the same time unless you're reading to them, and then what's the point? So he kind of takes off on that, saying, you know, keep your slides simple. You don't need to write, you know, a mini essay, you know, on your slides. And that's why maybe bullet points aren't the best way either. We'll get into that into later chapters.
Yeah. Reminds me, we probably should put a plug in for a YouTube video. We'll have to have everybody tune in and watch Life After Death by PowerPoint 2010, because
it's a must watch.
It's a comedian's look at all the things you can do wrong in a PowerPoint. And I think he has a slide exactly like you're describing there, Martin, with a 200 word limit, you know, maxing out the slide as well. So really hilarious to look at, but you know, been there, done that. I'm probably number one guilty. And I think we all are, kind of going back to my kids in the ninth grade learning PowerPoint. That's where you start. And everybody's kind of guilty of that, because that's what you see modeled for you as well. And so we got to change our way of thinking, and that's not always the easiest to do, but kind of clear the mind of all that kind of stuff and rethink how you do presentations.
Yeah. And he tears some things down right away. One of the things is you listen to him as you read the book. He says, you know, why do you need your logo on every single slide? What purpose does it serve? So it really kind of goes back to this simplicity concept, is, you know, remove all distractions. The only thing that that should be on the slide is the thing that's important to the point that you're trying to make, and nothing else. If that's just one image, that's fine. You don't need words. You're the one speaking the words. Or, as we'll get through later in the book, the importance of handouts, the importance of leave behinds, where you can leave all that detail. Really, the big idea is what you want to get across on a slide. So I think he makes some excellent points there.
Yeah, I remember him saying about telling his audience, don't bother taking notes. I'll give it all to you at the end, so that they're a lot more focused on you. But again, engaged. That's kind of training the audience to be outside the norm, because everybody's in this mode of, I got to write all this stuff down. I got to read everything that's on the screen, and I've got to listen to the guy that's talking. And that multitasking just kills what you're trying to get across in your presentation.
One thing that you'll learn, I mean, I've learned as I've kind of adopted this approach, is that it's more work this way. It's a lot easier to open up PowerPoint and, you know, take a generic template and start typing in bullets, and then go to the next slide, and the next slide, and the next slide, and you're done. This requires some good design principles, understanding white space, understanding colors and imagery, and really connecting what you're saying with what the students or listeners or viewers are seeing. And that comes through pretty loud and clear in this first chapter.
And hopefully he's going to train us on how to do some of those design principle things as we keep reading. I haven't read the book all the way through. I kind of read along as we go. So I'm looking forward to learning more.
Yep. So that's chapter one. Definitely worth the read. I think it's an inexpensive book, and I think worth having on your shelf. He's really, Gar is probably the standard of people to look to toward if you're looking to amp up your presentation skills. So it's a cheap book, quick read, and follow along with us. That would be great. And then we'd welcome your feedback as well.
So what we do is basically the second show of each month is dedicated to our book discussion. So you can tune in again in October for chapter two of Presentations In.
Okay, great. I'm looking forward to it. Sally, should we move on to, we've got a ministry resource this week.
We do.
Back in the groove of our normal schedule.
Yep, let's see if I can share my screen. And what I want to point our listeners to today is freebibleimages.org. And this has actually been a pick of the week of mine. A few months ago during our summer shows, I pointed out this website as a pick of the week, but now I want to make sure it gets on our ministry resource page. It's got great downloadable images and illustrations of a lot of different Bible stories. And you can download them in a lot of different formats. You can see that there's PowerPoint screens already designed for you. There's JPEG images, and they come in 4:3 ratio and 16:9 widescreen ratio. And basically, they're giving you free reign to do whatever it is that you want to do with these for ministry purposes. So an excellent website. But the reason it came back on my radar this week is because they've just released imagery, excellent imagery related to the Christmas story. So they have an angel visiting Mary, Mary visiting Elizabeth, an angel visiting Joseph, and then finally the birth of Jesus. And for each of those, there are multiple images that they make available. Mary and Joseph traveling in the countryside, the baby being born, and then some really beautiful pictures of Mary and Joseph with the baby. And again, you can take these and use them in Bible class settings or in school classroom settings or whatever. These are high quality images done with actors and actresses that definitely look the part in settings that look authentic to the day and age, at least as authentic as I'm aware of. Mm-hmm. And I think just super high quality. So check out freebibleimages.org. We'll make sure that it's on our ministry resource page for future reference. And specifically look for these new Christmas images. I did notice that they also are planning to release pictures of the shepherds visiting Mary and Jesus after the birth of the baby. So those are yet to be released, but hopefully before Christmas time, those will be available as well.
So it looks like they have images and illustrations as well. So if
they
you
do
a picture thing, right.
Mm-hmm. They have illustration sets of various Bible stories. So you can get hand-drawn illustrations. They're done in color, and they're very well done as well.
Nice. That's an awesome resource.
So especially
if we're talking about visuals and telling stories with pictures, always great to find good resources where you can do this. So I assume, I haven't looked a lot at this site, but I'm assuming that you can get Old Testament, New Testament stories, you know, all the major characters involved.
Right. And they're constantly adding more. If you scroll to the bottom of the whole site, you can sign up for their emails and get notification when new things are released. They have a Facebook page and a Twitter account. So they're pretty connected, and they're very professional with what they're offering. So
who's behind this?
I think it's a UK team. It's just a group of people that have some of these skills and wanted to make use of them to the glory of God.
Awesome. I like it. Okay, so that is freebibleimages.org.
That's correct.
Everything's free. It's right there in the name. So
yep.
Good deal. We have some news in tech. A couple of things coming out, Sally. Some big news by Amazon.
Yeah, we just wanted to focus on that and how that might affect the tablet market. Because Amazon announced actually a whole new series of tablets. They have updated their regular ebook reader to what they call now the Paperwhite. So you can still get the old ebook reader for less than $100, but now the new higher quality ebook reader is called Paperwhite. You can get it for $119 or for $179 with 3G, and that's free 3G, so you can download books at any time.
Right.
But the big news was that their Kindle Fire is being updated, and they now have an HD version, and coming in November, they're going to have an 8.9-inch display HD version. And that is a direct competitor then, just in time for Christmas, with the iPad. It's got high resolution. It has the capability of having 4G wireless, and at a very affordable data plan, you can get $50 for 1 year of 4G access. It's not a super high volume data plan, but it's way cheaper than anything from AT&T and Verizon on the iPad side. You can also get the 8.9-inch display for only $299 if you don't get the 4G plan, so just Wi-Fi on it. So that's a lot cheaper than the Wi-Fi only iPad as well. So head-to-head, look to be very comparable devices, but obviously you don't have the iTunes store behind the Kindle product. You have Amazon, which is big, but not as big as iTunes with all its, I don't know, over 250,000 apps on iTunes. So
right.
Some trade-off there.
Yeah, I think, Sally, there's three camps now. I talked a couple of months ago about the Nexus tablet, which is Google's offering in this area. So you have the Google Play Store there and some of the things that it has. You have Amazon, which is not as big into the apps as Google or Apple is, but they have probably more content, more movies, more books, of course. They're the leader there. So it depends on what your use case is, whether that's kind of where how you like to use your tablet for kind of media consumption or whether you need the apps. And then you have Apple, and, you know, rumors are that they maybe believe have a smaller tablet that would compete, you know, on the Nexus 7 or the, you know, the Kindle Fire apps, so, or Kindle Fire form factors. Have you ever seen a Kindle Fire or played with one?
I haven't.
I haven't either. So,
but also part of their announcement was a 7-inch upgrade of their Fire that's going to be 16 gig, have Wi-Fi, and only $200. So even if iPad jumps into that 7-inch screen, they're going to have some serious competition there. And those are releasing already in September. You don't have to wait till November for the 7-inch version. You can get one of those well ahead of the iPad release of their 7-inch. So lots of competition for sure.
Sure. It's interesting, and we should probably maybe spend some time on a later show talking about tablets and their fit for ministry purposes. I see a lot of tablets now cropping up in the hands of teachers. So usage in classrooms, and you have an iPad, you probably have some many ministry uses that we could talk about, which we have in the past, even just from recording Bible class. You do that with your,
yeah,
with your iPad.
Yeah, live stream our Bible class for sure.
Right. Yep. So cool.
Lots of cool
so
stuff.
Lots of news in tech. That leads us into our next segment, which is our picks of the week. Ladies first, of course.
Yep. And actually, you gave me a perfect lead in because it is an education / iPad application. It's Smart Notebook app for iPad, which was just released within the last week or so. And I read an interesting review of it. There's also an overview video. So while I am not an owner of this, it's kind of outside the realm of a pick of the week if I don't even have it yet. I'm just reading about it and wanting to make people aware of the fact that it's out there. Now, what this allows you to do on your iPad is open up your .notebook files. Those are the files created in the Smart Technology proprietary software that comes with smart boards that are that is the software where you can develop basically your presentations for use on the interactive whiteboard. And now you can develop those presentations on your notepad. You can share those presentations on your iPad, I should say. Those same notebook files will work on the iPad. And one big application of this would be if your students have iPads, then you can share the notebook files and they can do them on their individual iPads. Now, I want to make sure and point people to this review that I read. It's from the Teachers Love Smart Boards blog, which is an excellent resource in general. If you have a smart board, you'd want to know about this blog and follow it. But here's where you can read more of the details, more of the pros and cons of that initial evaluation. Now, obviously, it's right out of the blocks, so they will be releasing updates and things for this application. I'm sure it will improve over time. But I think he does a really good job of walking you through how you interact with it. It doesn't have all the functionality of your smart board software. So things like Flash don't play on the iPad.
Imagine that.
Yeah. And your pens don't have all the different ways that you can use them and things like that. So there are some drawbacks, and he's really upfront about that. And even in the conclusion of his review says this may not be ready for a big investment. I think the software is $5.99 at this point. So that would be a pretty hefty investment if you have a lot of iPads that you want to put it on. But he's very excited about the potential. And I think out of all of this, if you want to watch the YouTube video where they actually do the overview of the software, you'll probably get more from that than anything. Just seeing it in action and seeing what it's capable of. I know there's a lot of listeners out there that have smart boards in their classroom. So I wanted to make sure that you were aware of this new software.
So Sally, can the student then walk up to the smart board and interact with it as well, or it has to all be on the iPad?
Right. It's not that you're running the software that's running on the smart board. It's a separate copy of the notebook file. So there isn't that interaction from the iPad to the actual smart board. It's
more the way a normal app would work, let's say running from your laptop, you'd be able to actually manipulate what's on the laptop through the smart board interface,
you know,
with the touch interface. But this doesn't work that way.
No, this just allows you basically to make use of those notebook files on an iPad.
Gotcha. Okay.
And you know, you could develop your notebook files. That's the direction I was thinking. As a teacher, I'd want a copy of it so I could work on my notebook files on my iPad and transfer them to a computer that does work with the smart board.
Gotcha.
So, you can create from scratch there. You can open up existing files and modify them. It doesn't currently sync with software like Dropbox or Box.net, so you have to go through their protocol of sharing files at this point. Mm-hmm. But it looks like in a future version they will introduce that synchronization as well.
So early stages, it sounds like.
Yes.
Okay.
But I think very good. And of course, if you had the AirPlay kind of software, we talked about the Reflection app, or, you know, with Apple TV or whatever, where you could hook the iPad up to the screen, you really don't need a smart board. You could interact with the software on the iPad and project it without a smart board. So, I mean, there's lots of different angles to this.
Right. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Thanks for sharing. We'll keep an eye on that. My pick is for you folks who have to manage websites, and one of the standard graphic formats that you've probably determined that is useful to use for a number of different reasons are PNG files or PNG files. One of the reasons I like PNG files are that they retain transparency. So if you want to put an image or a logo or something over a background and have some of that background show through as opposed to a white box or black box or border around it, that's what PNGs are good for especially. One problem with PNGs, though, is they don't get as small as JPEGs all the time. So the utility that I've got for my pick of the week is called tinypng.org, free website that allows you to upload your PNG files and have the software, the application online, squish it down or compress it. And that's what that's all the website does. But it does a couple things as well. It maintains transparency. So as you push up your files or uploads, you can upload up to 20 at a time. It reduces that file size by as much as about 60%, which is pretty awesome.
Wow.
I'm working with the creation of a mobile app right now, and PNG files are all over this thing. And with a mobile app especially, coming over, you know, 3G or worse, you need the images to be as small as possible. And this shrunk them down between 50 and 60% each time. So what was a 20K image was down to, you know, 8K or 9K, something like that. So it's a really quick process. You simply drag and drop the file up there, and then it gives you a download link. These are 24-bit PNGs, which is the kind you really want to use because that maintains the color fidelity. On their website, they talk a little bit about how they do it without losing any resolution and still having it look good. So anybody that works with websites or mobile apps or just PNGs in general, this is a good thing to kind of bookmark. And again, it's nothing that you need to download. It's something you simply need to go to, drag the files, and then download the files that come out the other end. So if you edit your files or create PNGs in Aviary or PicMonkey or whatever, then this would maybe be the last step in the workflow to really get that PNG down as skinny as possible. By the way, PNG stands for Portable Network Graphics. This is kind of a newer file format, newer than GIFs and JPEGs, and made specifically for the web, and really has become the standard on a lot of different websites. So something that you probably should think about having in your toolbox.
Excellent. I like those webmaster tools. We have a lot of do-it-yourself kind of webmasters out there who are trying to do the best job they can. So great tip.
Okay. Sally, let's move on to our Wells.net feature of the week.
Excellent. Just had to make mention that the Wells Tech podcast made it into Together, and I thought it would be a good opportunity for us to talk about Together, which is a biweekly publication from Wells with all the latest news and updates from Wells. And you can find it on the Wells website, wells.net, by going under News and Events and then clicking Together. And what you'll get is a summary of all the current articles and top stories, and then you can click through and read them. And right here in the sidebar is where it says that in the media spotlight, Wells Tech is doing a video podcast. I don't know what we're thinking, but we've added video. So those of you that are just listening to audio, maybe you aren't aware that we now have a video version as well. And you can get that on our Wells Tech website at wellstech.wells.net.
But in addition, Sally, we should probably let our listeners know that if you are of a mind to watch us live and watch all of our goofs and flubs and whatever, you can do that because on our show notes page, we post a calendar of the time that we will actually record, and we stream it live over YouTube, which is a service that is connected with our Google Hangouts. That's the technology we're using. And each week, if you tune in to YouTube at that approximate time, you know, sometimes we're a little bit later, but we try and be as faithful as possible. We stream it live, and actually next week, I don't know if we've updated the calendar yet, but I think we moved it to 8. Did we move it to 8? Or maybe that's in 2 weeks. We're at 9 o'clock next week. 9 o'clock Central.
I'll have to do some work on that calendar.
Yeah. 9 o'clock Central is the normal time on Tuesdays, unless our schedules demand that we swap that out sometime. So just look at the calendar and you'll see what time we're broadcasting.
Excellent.
And join us. Maybe in the future, I think the engagement side of it's a little bit lacking now. It's kind of one dimensional. Why would you want to just watch us live? I think we'll in the future add kind of a chat feature so that you can interact with us as we're talking on the show. So
I am not a good multitasker, Martin.
No, I'm not either. But this is practice. There's two of us, so one of us ought to be able to do one thing, another the other. So.
Oh, that's it. Just one thing. If I could do just one thing, I'd be in good shape.
Someone once said multitasking is a code for screwing up two things at the same time.
Excellent description.
Let's move on to community feedback.
Sure.
Did I skip something?
No, I did want to make
mention.
Oh,
you had something else. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Just before we leave the Together, that if you don't currently receive Together, there's a link for subscribing. We'll include that in the show notes. You can get Together and lots of other great Wells content. So you want to check that out. And then before we get to community feedback, probably worth a mention that we do a 7 Best Show each month on Wells Tech. And coming up in October, our 7 Best topic is going to be member prospect and student management data tools, basically. How do you keep up with all that great information that you want to track about your members, your prospective members, and the students in your school? So if you have tips and tricks, tools that you use for tracking all that data, we would love to hear about it. So please contact us. WellsTech.wells.net is our show notes site. You can leave comments there, and there's lots of other ways to connect with us just from that site.
Very nice. Now,
we should get to community feedback. Yep. We have lots of community feedback to share, which I just love. Mm-hmm. Starting with links from our community shared in Digo. And for those of you that aren't familiar, Digo is just a way to share links easily. And if you become part of our Wells Tech group, you can share links that everyone in Wells Tech can be made aware of easily. And there were several of those, probably too many to mention in today's show, but one in particular that was close to my heart was the Raspberry Pi tutorials that my friend Tom Rosenau sent. He even tagged it with my name. Sally should be interested in this. I found another Raspberry Pi guy. It's my friend Aaron Spike at Martin Luther College. He's got not one, but two Raspberry Pis. So great things are going to come from
They're cheap.
That's right. We're working on making ours be kind of like the musical stairs thing where you walk upstairs and it plays sounds as you go up the stairs. We're trying to come up with some infrared sensors that will indicate somebody's passed through and play music or a welcome to St. John's School or something like that audio. So that's our Raspberry Pi experiment at the moment. So, but this is great. My son was really excited because this has operating system development, Turing machines, temperature sensors, lots of cool tutorials for using the Raspberry Pi.
Cool. You got to keep us updated
via
your blog or on the show
on
your Raspberry progress.
It's fun stuff.
Yeah.
So, Martin, you shared a link to 20 beautiful education WordPress themes.
Yeah, I know a lot of our listeners use WordPress, and a lot of people have to maintain educational websites for schools or whatever. And WordPress has no shortage of templates. As you read through this article, there's lots of examples, and that's kind of why I like some of these blog posts. Is they show examples of things that could be done. So they look at a lot of these are colleges, but there are others. The EduBlog template is on here. All kinds of other educational themes for all kinds of different topics. As you scroll through here, just kind of you'll pick up some ideas maybe for your blog or your website that could be useful. And all of these are usually free, although some of them are what they call premium themes. So there is a small cost to grabbing them. But a lot of them are free and very easy to install. If you've never played with WordPress at all, it's a very kind of plug and play architecture where you grab a theme, you click a button, and then you can preview it, and then lo and behold, it has become your website. So worth checking out if for no other reason than just some of the designs that were done here.
Excellent find. I'm always happy to see how other people are doing it and do it well. You know, I teach a web design class, and one thing I have people do is just peruse a lot of websites. And not that you know about all the nuances of design that they're making use of, but you know what you like, mm-hmm. and you can look at other people's and get ideas. And so that's a great, great tool for that. Yep. One more mention of a Digo link was from the EdTech Hub, and it's a matchword free editable, for me to say. Yes. Yeah, we're going to taste this flash template. So it's basically a matching game, and it walks you through step by step, making updates to it so you can make use of matchword. It's a spell master game. So
cool.
Teacher resource for you.
Beautiful.
Then we need to jump over to the Wells Tech board on Pinterest, a happening place, Martin Sprigg.
I've noticed that, yes.
Yeah, we have many contributors and lots of interesting things to share here. In the infographic world, lots of cool infographics have been posted here. I think a lot of them from Perry Lund, and they all kind of reference back to the site Edudemic, and they're all really well done, like one on smartphone usage and the apps that people are downloading, the types of apps that people make use of, one on mobile learning and you know, those mobile devices in the classroom and how many are being used and what they're being used for. And then one on called the gamification of education, which is kind of near and dear to my heart.
Yeah.
I've actually started a badge program. So my kids are earning badges in tech class this year, which is kind of gamifying our work there a mm-hmm. little bit. So
cool.
Our friend Amanda Helmkamp recommended that we follow the boards of another Pinterest user. Her name is Katie Christo, and Katie has boards dedicated to iPad apps in education and
cool.
organized really nicely on her boards. Let's see if I can bring that up on my computer real quick. Just a quick look at Katie's boards. She has preschool iPads and K-1st, on up, all the way through middle school and high school. She has her favorite apps and apps that she wants to test and things like that. So she seems to really have a pulse on good apps for education usage. So
sweet.
We recommend that.
Good one board. She has most of them are all on educational educational technology.
Mm-hmm. And then just a quick mention that there is new software out. It's called DISP, D-I-S-P, Recorder, and it works on the iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad. It is a recording, a screencast recorder for the iPad, basically.
Oh, finally.
So, yeah, finally you can record your screen, not just within an app, but the entire iPad experience. And it's a pretty good review. There's some good and there's some not so good. So it's a pretty balanced review. But if you're interested at all, the software is not cheap. I want to say it's $10. Let's take a quick look at the software page in iTunes. And the price is $10.49. Mm-hmm. But if this is something that you've been wanting to do, you know, we can screencast out the wazoo on a computer with Jing and Screener and lots of other tools. But the actual iPad screencasting has been kind of
non-existent.
But now you have control over that. And I recommend the review to check it out.
So does it capture the screen and audio then, too? So does it use a microphone, I suppose?
It does.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Good.
So,
yeah, that's got some definite educational uses because there are things only on the iPad that you would maybe want to record for the kids, you know, in a flipped classroom setting as well. I can think of my wife using this for some of the art applications that are iPad only, so mm-hmm. art demonstrations. Awesome.
So, yeah. And you wouldn't have known them about that unless I had pinned it on Pinterest, Martin. So, yes. Excellent find there on Pinterest. Imagine
what would we do without Pinterest?
I don't know. I don't know.
Thinking at this point.
I'm sure you are. So, mentioned that there was a follow-up email actually from me where I found a few different acceptable use policies floating around on the internet, not for students, but for teachers. And that was a question that Ryan Rosenthal had posed to the Wells Tech listserv. So if you were following that and looking for something to use in your school, you might want to check out some of the links that were provided there on the listserv. Nice. And then finally, our friend Rachel Pearson, who's at Trinity in Waukesha, a middle school teacher there, was looking for a list of Wells teachers on Twitter. So if there's anyone out there that's curated a list specifically of Wells teachers, we'd love to have you share that. I have one that's more of our Wells Tech listener group that I know of that are tweeting, but we'd love to kind of compile those if you do have a list of Wells teachers on Twitter.
Very nice.
And that will do it for community feedback.
Lots of feedback. Yeah. And if mm-hmm. you are interested in providing your own feedback, it's really easy to do. And we would encourage you to do that. Don't just be a listener, be a participant. Join the conversation, wellstech.wells.net. And every social network out there, we've got a presence on Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, Pinterest. I'm probably forgetting some. All of those you can contribute and we'll catch the, you know, whatever message it is that you want to share with us. We have voicemail. We have email. All of those on our show notes page well. So show notes page, wellstech.wells.net. Plus all the good stuff that we store there. Great resource to just bookmark and go there at the end of every show to grab the stuff that we talked about. Sally, we've got some next week stuff coming up. We're getting back in the groove again, and a lot of people I know appreciate the people that we have on the show to interview, and we're going to be trying to add them to the you know, the video approach here, and we hope to have a graduate student, a Bethany Seminary student, Jeff Hendricks, who has a thesis. Like, is it a thesis?
Yeah. Did a thesis and then some supporting videos to explain the thesis.
Right.
All on religion and media.
Right. So he's taken that whole thesis thing and wrapped it around different multimedia that he's put together. So we're interested to talk about Jeff, and not just the stuff about how he created it, but the thesis itself is an interesting topic, too.
Absolutely.
So you'll have to tune in next week for that.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I am, too. So, Sally, that's going to about do it for the show this week. Thanks again for joining us, and we hope you tune in next week. Let's close the show with the music of Branches Band, their song Hearts of Stone. Talk to you next week, everybody.
Stone and give us hearts for faith alone.